Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs. I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I'm navigating the wild throes of perimenopause.
As someone who's worked in the mental health sector for a long time, the debate around menopause in this country feels like where we were around mental health about 14 years ago.
I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and WTFs along the way.
We've got this stigmatised set of symptoms that people are experiencing, and people are starting to say, do you know what, I've had enough of like staying quiet about it.
I'm very excited to invite a techie person onto On My Last Eggs today, not something I say very often. Becky Cotton is a co-founder of Lumino, who are going to solve our menopause problems with technology. Becky, welcome.
Hello, it's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you too. So you co-founded Lumino, which just sounds brilliant. I'm a very untechy person. It sounds like you've got a giant brain to even think this thing up and then make it come into fruition. Tell us what Lumino is, and then tell us what Seren is, which I think is the first thing Lumino is going to give us, and where you're at.
First thing to say is, I mean, it's very kind of you to describe me as a techie person, but I'm someone who's worked in healthcare for a very long time, so kind of 20 years plus. And I guess before I co-founded Lumino, which was back in 2020, I was really thinking about really, how do we improve everyone's mental health? How do we help people have healthier and happier lives? And I'd done that through policy, and we can maybe talk a little bit about that. But really, it's all about the mission for us. It's all about how do we bring better mental health for everyone? That's so important. So one in five of us at any one time are experiencing a mental health problem. I'm one of that one in five periodically throughout my life. Most people are. But in the UK, we know only one in three have access to any kind of treatment. So really what Lumino is all about is reinventing how mental health treatment is delivered. And that's really all about how do we use digital therapeutics to do that? Which sounds like a very sort of techie word, and it's probably a word that a lot of people aren't familiar with yet, but it's the idea that, you know, we're so used to using apps and things like that in our everyday lives. But digital therapeutics are about how do we deliver a clinical intervention via a digital means. So that includes everything from smart inhalers for people that have got asthma through to, particularly in the sort of mental health side, how do we deliver psychological therapy via sort of app-based programs. And we're certainly not sort of suggesting for one second that, you know, you want to replace therapists. We think there's always going to be a need for therapists, right? But even if we tripled the budget of the NHS tomorrow, we're still not going to have enough therapists to deliver treatment to everyone who needs it. And there's a lot of people for whom therapy in person is either a bit embarrassing, or it's really hard to fit around work and other stuff. And some people are just, frankly, probably not at the point where they're unwell, but are maybe struggling a little bit and could just do with a bit of helping hand and just learn about some of the tools and techniques that you can learn through therapy that would be helpful for them in their lives. And so that's for us what digital therapeutics are all about. So the first product that we're developing is called Seren, and that's about delivering cognitive behavioral therapy adapted for menopause-related symptoms delivered via a smartphone-based app. So that's treatment kind of at scale. We want to get that out to people through the NHS in the UK, so it's free at the point of use, but it's also clinically sound and it's evidence-based, and that's really what we're trying to do.
Well, Becky, I'm super excited that the first thing you're launching is menopause related. I'm super excited that it's Seren. I mean, the whole product sounds amazing for the whole of mental health, but I'm really glad that you've started with menopause. So how will this help menopausal women?
So we know from the evidence that is there that cognitive behavioral therapy can really help with three things. So one, we really know that it can help with low mood and anxiety related symptoms. And that's probably where people are most familiar with CBT at all. If they've heard of it before, they'll have probably heard of it in the context of somebody having depression or anxiety. So we know it can really help with that. There's really good evidence base for it helping with sleep problems. So God knows, you know, for anyone going through menopause, if you are, you know, struggling with your sleep, or if you're waking up in the night due to hot sweats and things like that, that disrupted sleep can be a really massive, massive thing. And there's a great evidence base for CBT around like helping people sort of improve their sleep. And then the third is, and this is where the evidence gets really, really interesting, is about the frequency and severity, self-reported severity of hot flushes and night sweats. And look, people might kind of quite reasonably say, well, how in God's name is a different way of thinking about something going to reduce the severity or the intensity of a hot flush or something like that? And to that point, I say absolutely right. You can never stop these things from happening because this is a psychological therapy-based intervention. We're certainly not wanting to sort of gaslight people and say, well, you know, this will cure your symptoms. It's not. But we know that there is an interaction between sort of anxiety, worry, frustration, all those sorts of emotions that might come to people in the moment of having a hot flush, and then how severe the experience of that can be. So if we can use some of the tools and techniques from CBT to help us kind of keep cool in a bit of a hot moment, then that can reduce the intensity of those sorts of symptoms and just make them just a little bit easier to cope with. And anything that can just help people feel a little bit more comfortable or more confident about going about everyday life has got to be a good thing. So the evidence base is there, but we know making this available through the NHS, it would be really, really difficult because those sorts of services that deliver psychological therapies are under a lot of strain already. Waiting lists are quite high. And so we want to try a different way to try and get some of those tools and techniques out there. So that's why we're building Sarin.
Did you put all the problems that could go on a mental health scale, put them in a hat and go, oh, we've got menopause. Right, let's start with that. How did you start with menopause and why?
It sort of dates back to 2016. And I was really lucky and I got something called a Churchill Fellowship, which people can look up if they're interested in. It's a fantastic organisation. And that sort of set me down this path of looking into digital therapeutics and how they can help support better mental health, better health, full stop. And then thinking about, well, then how we can apply the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy to a whole range of different conditions. So there were all sorts of like potential areas that we might sort of go down. But you sort of asked why menopause. I kind of say, well, why not? I'm 43 and I'm kind of looking at services that are out there at the moment thinking this has got to be so much better. We have got such a long way to go to improve the quality of care. And at first, before we even started sketching any ideas for what a solution might look like, I just spent a whole summer in that first lockdown. If you remember, there wasn't a lot to do. So I was just finding people on the internet and saying, can I talk to you for 30 minutes about what your experience has been like? And the more and more women that I talked to about what that experience was like and how we know HRT is highly safe, highly effective for the vast majority of people. But there are a large number of people for whom that just isn't the right option for them, either because that's personal choice or they might have a medical condition that means that they just can't take HRT, even if they would want to. And, you know, it just seemed to me, talking to those women, that they were coming away from their GP kind of feeling like there isn't really a lot else there in terms of options that might be doable. And then talking to GPs who desperately wanted to give better quality care to their patients, who were saying, I just don't have a lot in my toolbox. Like, I know that CBT would be helpful, but I know I can't refer for it on the NHS because it's not part of the services that are being provided at the moment. And when we started thinking about, well, this might be an idea, a lot of them were saying, well, this would be fantastic for us for use in our surgeries. At least you have a different option to be able to give people. And I think, you know, menopause is one of those things in the last couple of years that sort of really risen up the agenda and we're having a lot more conversations about it. And that's a really good thing. Funnily enough, it really wasn't when we first started Dream, we got this idea. It really wasn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're forward thinking when you started out in 2016 and lots of areas you could have gone into and yet you went to menopause. So well done you, having some kind of third eye, sixth sense intuition.
Well, it feels like, as someone who's worked in the mental health sector for a long time, the debate around menopause in this country feels like where we were around mental health about 12, 14 years ago. So we've got this stigmatized set of symptoms that people are experiencing. And people are starting to say, do you know what? I've had enough of like staying quiet about it. And also, I should be able to expect to get good health care for this. And it should be better understood by other people. And we're not going to kind of take that anymore. And it does feel definitely a sort of lessening of the stigma around mental health conditions around then. And it was just absolutely beautiful to see. And I kind of see it's happening now around menopause. But I think as a woman, if you're working in healthcare and you're not sort of looking at some of the massive health inequalities that women are still experiencing, and this is 2023, for God's sake, then why wouldn't you want to be working on some kind of solutions to do with that?
So lots of questions about how it actually works. So at the moment, you're doing trials with it. People are kind of volunteering to use it. And then how many people are doing that? How long will that happen for? Will you tweak it? What's the next stage?
I'm a kind of researcher by background, right? So I'm a geek when it comes to evidence base, and I take the policy stuff around this stuff really seriously in the regulation. So it would have been quite easy, I think. And you do see this in the menopause space. You know, it'd be quite easy to kind of develop an app and put it out there and sort of be quite careful about the claims that you're making. Just put it out there. We don't want to do that. This is a clinical intervention. That means it's classified as a medical device. And so we have to make sure that it's, you know, got all the regulatory approvals that it needs to have as a medical device. We do believe very strongly that this is something that should be free at the point of use for people as far as we can possibly make it. So we'd really love to be able to get this out through the NHS and make that possible. That means it's a very lengthy process. So you have to go through lots of kind of rounds of testing. We're at the point where we're going to be doing some qualitative work over the summer with some of our academic partners and our research partners, and then looking to start some NHS pilots in due course after that. The beautiful thing is that often researchers working in healthcare find it's really difficult to engage people in research. Like, it's really difficult to find people who want to give their time to help develop stuff. We've been absolutely overwhelmed with people sort of wanting to take part in interviews. And we did some filming last week for the content of the app, and we had some fantastic people come along and talk about their experiences at that. But we were always looking for more testers. So if people would be interested in taking part in our research, then please go to serin.health and sign up, and we'll be in touch with you about that.
I'm going to sign up as soon as this is
finished. Please do.
And so what actually happens if I signed up to be part of this testing program? What would it be on my phone? What would I be doing? How many times a day would I be doing? Would there be prompts to do stuff? Is it a program? How does it work?
So in terms of the research that we're going to be doing over the summer, we're literally currently designing what that's going to look like in terms of how we do that research. So it won't just be a case that we'll just sort of chuck out an app and say, oh, try this and let us kind of know what you think. There'll be researchers involved in that. But just to explain briefly sort of how it works. So it's really sort of 3 points. First thing is, before we sort of get into anything, the first stage is an assessment. So much the same as if you were going to go and see a doctor or any healthcare professional about a condition, then you'd probably be asked a sort of set of questions. And for us, that's all about understanding where you are, and also to understand a little bit more about your presentation. Because I think this is one of the things that's slightly sort of frustrating about the current discussion around menopause, is that it's very much dominated by kind of white middle class women that frankly look a bit like me. And, you know, talking to so many people through our research, you know, I've talked to, you know, women in their 20s who've been desperately trying for a baby and then found out in the course of their fertility treatment that actually they're going through an early menopause. You know, I've been talking to young women that have been going through cancer treatment in their 20s and 30s, and then suddenly they're going through this as well. And there's very little help for those sorts of communities. So really trying to understand sort of what your presentation is and what's led to you coming to a program like this. So we ask questions to do with the frequency and the severity of your hot flushes, night sweats, that kind of thing, trying to figure out kind of some measures around where your mood is and also how your sleep is doing. And then any other symptoms, because God knows there's like 34 symptoms associated with going through perimenopause.
Yeah, I don't know if CBT can help me with my really sore feet at the minute. No. I don't know. I mean, maybe it can. Maybe it can. But
it's about having that holistic picture, right? These things are not a magic bullet. But I'm of the firm belief that CBT is amazing. I mean, they should just teach it in school. Once you kind of learn the sort of tools and techniques that, I don't know if you've ever had CBT, I have, but I think it's just really helpful in life. So that's the first stage. It's an assessment.
Is that assessment AI? I feel AI is an interesting sort of buzz thing at the minute, isn't it? Everyone's talking about AI and, you know, from the extremes of it's going to take over the world. So isn't it amazing because it can diagnose cancer that's only 0.1 of a millimeter big or whatever? Who's doing that assessment in the app?
So there's kind of sort of set parameters. So there's certain things. So we know that if there's sort of certain types of responses to some of those questions, then we know that, you know, perhaps if somebody's scoring, you know, particularly high on measures related to depression or anxiety, then we know that perhaps this might not be the best place for them to be getting the support they need and directing them to other forms of support. But it is an assessment that's designed by our healthcare professionals, and we take that really, really seriously. We have an amazing GP with an interest in women's health working on this. We have an amazing psychologist who's also an associate professor at UEA. And then we've got a whole team of kind of incredible kind of medical advisors around us that are just making sure everything we're doing on that front is, you know, clearly led by what the evidence says. So we take that bit really, really seriously.
So they've had their assessment, and then what happens? Yeah.
Then what happens? Then there's some kind of like whizzy science stuff behind the scenes, which then sort of figures out, okay, what does that personalized program look like for you? So for example, and this might not be in the first iteration of the program, but for example, if you are somebody who's gone through menopause as a result of cancer treatment, probably want to give you some personalized resources. The app then presents you with that personalized program. And the idea is that you work through that at your own pace. And we try and be realistic about how people use their phones, because no one's going to sit on their phone for an hour and, you know, go through, you know, an entire thing like that. So we've chunked everything up into just 2 to 3 minute steps, making it really easy to fit in with anything else that you're doing. Maybe you might do it on the commute, or you might do it in a spare kind of minute here or there. The idea is if you do kind of one or two steps a day, you'll finish the program in about 4 to 6 weeks, which is usually about what a kind of psychology-based intervention would usually take if you were having that face-to-face anyways. Just the difference there would be you're probably going once a week for an hour in a room with someone, rather than doing that sort of chunked up in a kind of step-by-step way on your phone.
And what would these little steps look like? What, you know, give me a flavour of what people might be doing.
Some of them are videos, some of them are animations, some of them are we're talking to people about their own stories and that sort of lived experience stuff. You know, coming from a mental health background, I'm a firm believer in, you know, you share stories, like if the more people share their stories around stuff like that, and you're part of this in what you're doing here, I've listened to a few of your episodes, like it's a huge part of then dismantling that stigma. It's a huge, you know, part of dismantling that stigma. And also it can help people, particularly for those that perhaps aren't ready to go to a menopause cafe, or perhaps, you know, they don't have friends or family that are going through the same situation at the same time that they are. It can just help you feel a little bit less alone. Lots of kind of journaling exercises and lots of stuff that we'll be experimenting on through our research to see what kind of sorts of content people are responding to and the sorts of things that they like doing on there. And then alongside that, there's all sorts of additional resources like sort of mindfulness meditations and guides to sort of other symptoms. Obviously, like you said, cognitive behavioral therapy is not going to help my sore foot.
What about my itchiness? Actually, it might. Yeah. I think it might help my itchiness. When you talk about because when you talk about it helping the severity of the hot flushes, being itchy all the time is something that, you know, that's not all the time, but I get these sporadic bouts of itchy, which is definitely a menopause symptom for me. I get wound up that I'm itchy. And like, yeah. And it normally happens, I get into bed and I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a terrible night's sleep because I've started itching. And I get out of bed and I take an antihistamine and I get back into bed. And I'm like, how long is this antihistamine going to work? And I need to not itch and blah, blah, blah. So yeah. I'm guessing it probably could help me with that. If not my sore feet, then my itchies.
Yeah, right. Because it's not going to help the itchiness go away. Like, it's not going to help with that. But if you're having that when you're going to bed, perfectly normal set of kind of thoughts to be running through your head. But I would hazard a guess that you're probably not falling asleep that quickly. And that probably has a kind of knock-on effect if you're not getting enough sleep and da da da. So it can help with those sorts of things. But also we have access to amazing clinicians. So we can say, you know, all sorts of questions that people might ask about, you know, all sorts of symptoms. Some of which, you know, some people find very difficult going to their GP and talking about.
We've got my dry vagina, for instance.
Yeah.
It got me so down. I'd talk about my vagina to anybody because it was such a problem. It's just, I just want it sorted. I don't know. I saying to the receptionist, so my vagina's really sore. What are you going to do for me?
Well, you know, you go into your local chemist. Do you really want to go and have that conversation in earshot of a load of other people? I'm sorry, my vagina's a bit dry. Probably not. I suppose the good thing about great medics involved in it is that, well, then I can go to our GP and say, if someone came to you and they were complaining about having a really dry vagina, what would your advice be? And then just getting their take on it so that then other people can access that kind of information for themselves, and then they can decide what they want to do about it or what sort of treatments might be out there that they might want to try.
So you've done your 4 to 6 weeks, and I haven't done CBT. I've had therapy, so I am a great believer in the power of talking therapies and how it changes you and makes you better able to cope with things. I often also think that just life does that the longer you're on the planet. You know, I mean, menopause aside, you know, you go, well, that thing happened and it was awful and I was devastated, but I came out the other side and actually I was better afterwards. So the next time a bad thing comes, you're like, well, you know, I've got some experience with this. So, like, you know, it's going to be okay. I can handle this. So, but therapy, I'm a big believer in, but I haven't done cognitive behavioral therapy. So when you've finished your 4 to 6 weeks, are there things you have to consciously put into place on a sort of daily basis, or when things crop up that you need to deal with? I don't really think about my past therapy when I have difficulties. It's just sort of somehow I'm better than I used to be. Thank goodness, because it's not cheap. I'm curious to know how it works once you've done the course. How does it work practically?
It's no different from having CBT in, you know, real life, kind of one-to-one with someone. Some people find that a course of psychological therapy of CBT with a therapist, maybe one is enough, right? And then that those tools and techniques and things like that will be there for them for life. Some people, you know, they might go back, they might have another rough patch in another couple of years, and they might find some benefit in going back to it again. But just in terms of sort of the sorts of tools and techniques that we sort of talk about, these are sorts of techniques that you can apply to lots of different things, not just your sort of menopause related symptoms. But CBT is all really about how your thoughts, your feelings, your physical sensations and your actions are all interconnected. So one feeds the other. So if you're feeling a particular way about a particular situation, that'll affect how you think. How you think affects what your physical sensations you're having, and that in turn affects what you do. So it's kind of bringing awareness to this whole idea that everything like that is connected. And then, you know, to do with our thoughts, well, how do we identify patterns in our thoughts? How do we then sort of identify some thoughts that might be a little bit unhelpful, and how do we think about challenging them? And then on the behavior side, how do we sort of try and identify what are some of the behaviors that we're doing that may or may not be helpful, and do more of the stuff that is helpful and less of the stuff that isn't? And then we also bring in perspectives from sort of allied psychological therapies, or what we call sort of third wave approaches. So about how do we practice acceptance and self-compassion in a time like this? Because there's some positive things actually about menopause. I do think there's a kind of give no shit aspect to some of this stuff that
absolutely,
I think could be really empowering and fantastic. So I think, you know, can't talk about the negative stuff all the time, but some of this stuff is a bit shit, and it's okay that it's a bit shit, and to just be kind to yourself because you are going through stuff that is a bit shit and is a bit difficult to deal with. And just, you know, making time to make sure that you're looking after yourself and that you understand that that's okay. Just practicing that day to day, I think, is a really helpful, healthy thing to be doing.
One of the things I hear and see and read a lot about anecdotally from women, you know, like me, like you soon, probably going through menopause. One thing that just sounds awful that I haven't had is waking up with a terrible existential anxiety and feeling of doom. I hear women describe waking up like sort of almost like they're drowning in something. So they've been asleep, you know, in theory there's nothing going on, you know, a thought has cropped up, they literally wake with this, and that sets the tone for their day. I'm guessing this will help with that.
What you're describing is anxiety. So I am someone who lives with anxiety, so I know what that feels like, and it's horrible. It's really, really horrible. And we know CBT can be really helpful with anxiety. I would say as well, mental health problems amongst women, they peak at kind of that sort of typical perimenopausal age. I think with good reason, because this is a stage of life where I think, you know, people are dealing with a lot. They're dealing with that often if they're having a sort of typical menopause presentation of sort of starting those symptoms in their sort of mid to late 40s, you know, that's also at a time when people are dealing with a lot of career stress, they're dealing with a lot of stress at home, they might have kind of elderly parents to be dealing with and stuff like that. That's a pretty rubbish time. You know, CBT can be really helpful for stuff like that, but I would also say there is always a kind of place for medication and all sorts of other different approaches. So if people are having that sense of like fear and dread, like that's really ugh, like do go and talk to your GP. They will have probably spoken to at least 8 or 9 other people that morning that are going through exactly the same thing. If they're anything like the experiences I've had with my GP, they'll be very understanding and supportive. So I would encourage people to to go and talk to their GP about that, because there is stuff that might be helpful.
It's interesting because I never had anxiety in any way, shape or form, or depression, I don't think. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? These words get bandied about, you know, I'm a bit depressed. Well, what does that actually look like? So I'm pretty sure I've never been depressed. I've been devastated, heartbroken, grief stricken, miserable, negative in troughs for short periods of time, but I've never been depressed. And I definitely never had anxiety until I started with the menopause. But you know, it's that thing, it was so weird because it is that thing, it's like in your chest and you're like, oh my god, there's actually like a feeling, you know, it's a physical feeling along with this mental thing. And luckily I really didn't have it too badly, and it seemed, now I'm on HRT, it seems to have leveled out. But one of the things, and I've talked about this a lot on this podcast, one of the things was driving anxiety, and I'm guessing it helped with that kind of thing.
So you're identifying a particular situation there where you're experiencing those sorts of thoughts. So then thinking through, then being aware of what those thoughts are, how you might challenge them, and then how you might sort of, you know, adapt your behavior accordingly. So some of this stuff can be really, really helpful. CBT can certainly be helpful for stuff like that.
And so you've got this summer of program rollout to those who've signed up, and research and tweaking and boosting and other words that might apply to making something better, more robust. What is then the time frame for this? And if and when and how, the holy grail, does the NHS pick this up and we can all have it for free? What's the sort of time scale of all of this, do you think?
That's a great question. It's a bit of a how long is a piece of string question. I mean, we certainly hope to be doing sort of NHS trials next year. That's our sort of plan. There's a lot of planning that goes into an NHS trial because, funnily enough, they have ethics approval and they want to make sure that you're doing the right thing.
Not just wake up one morning and say, oh, let's...
Fancy doing a trial. Like, funnily enough, there's some rules around that. as there absolutely should be. So we're just in the process of... We've got some NHS sites already that are really keen to pilot this, which is fantastic. We're always kind of looking for more. But the plan is sort of to kind of lock that down and where we're doing it and who our academic partner around that study is going to kind of be, and continue on that path. But we've got some great colleagues that we're working with already on our research stuff. You know, so many sort of health apps and things like that can be a bit, I don't know, people's experience of them can be a little bit, they can be a bit dull, they can be a bit worthy and a bit dull.
I like the idea that you're going to make a really fun app. Is it like Candy Crush, but with cognitive behavioural therapy? I've never done Candy Crush, I don't know what that's like.
There's lots of experimenting that we need to do in our research to kind of see what people respond to. But that's the challenge, is how do you make something that is evidence-based, that's grounded in, you know, what we know works, but also people really like using, and that doesn't feel like a chore. And if we crack that, and that is an if, but if we crack that, then I think we can then go on to start to look at lots of other sort of conditions and stages of life where these sorts of tools and techniques can be helpful.
Well, it sounds fantastic, Becky. I'm very excited to follow it. And you won some kind of digital techie advancement award for this, didn't you?
We've had two awards from Innovate UK, and we've just received our second award from NIHR, which is the National Institute of Health Research. So we are quite nerdy. But the second award that we got from Innovate UK was in March of this year. So that was for me specifically. That was a Women in Innovation Award. So
that's it. That's it. You're the badass.
I mean, I'm not somebody who sort of seeks awards or sort of anything like that, but it's nice to have the recognition, and it's really nice to have the recognition from Innovate UK because they've been huge supporters of ours since the very start and have been so supportive and so helpful. So that was really lovely. And it also, because there's other women that get that award every year, there's a lovely cohort of people doing really cool things, and just getting to know some of the things that they're doing is super, super exciting.
Well, I wish you all the best with this. Remind us again, if people want to sign up right now to be part of this first wave of women testing it in its infancy.
Please do. So if you would like to sign up, or if you just are a bit curious and would like some more information, but you don't know if you wanted to sign up for kind of research stuff yet, that's fine too. You can sign up at seren.health.
Seren.health, and that's S-E-R-E-N, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely stuff. And I wish you all the very best with this. I'm so excited for it. I also wish you all the best with your menopause, because it's coming whenever it is.
I kind of feel like it might already be starting. But
interesting. What's happening?
I'm at that stage where I'm like, is that a hot flush or am I just, I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm definitely at that point.
Again, anecdotally, it feels like it's starting to happen earlier for women, or maybe they're more aware of what the symptoms are. So they're, yeah. I wish you a painless and swift one. Because the other side is where we want to get to.
I thank you very much for your good wishes, Rachel. I appreciate it. And, you know, keep fighting the power and doing the good work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Becky Cotton, co-founder of Lumino and Seren, the first thing to come out of Lumino. And yeah, this exciting bit of tech that's going to be helping us all feel so much better. Thank you so much for coming on My Last Eggs.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks again to Becky Cotton. To find out more about her app, go to hellolumino.com. On next week's episode, comedian, writer and pub landlady Debbie Baisden is back to talk about taking the menopause to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and almost getting her kit off on Naked Education. You can follow On My Last Eggs with new episodes released every Wednesday on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get yours. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Do send a message. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great week.